If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Maroon Friday edition of The Yard. Hope you're well. Hope it's a payday for you. Wouldn't that be great? Should be. If you're a bi-weekly or weekly wage earner, it's probably payday for you. So congratulations. You made it. Get out and go do some fun things. Hopefully you'll be at Duty Noble Field tomorrow. And before we even get too deep in the weeds here, today's game, 3 o'clock. Moved up due to weather. And I could opine here for several hours about the ruin of society that the weather app has wreaked upon the world. It's a great thing, but man, I'll tell you one thing. It's incredible to me, and I posted about this on Facebook last night. It absolutely boggles my mind how that we've had people that have become so knowledgeable about the world. It's true. Now, there's more information available at any point in human history. But we have people, it's like as soon as the final pitch is thrown on Sunday, all of a sudden, you know, the social media commentary, well, I'm glad we got these games in because the next weekend looks like a washout. It never is. It never is. But that doesn't stop us from posting those screenshots. You know, and it's incredible the people that were all epidemiologists during COVID, then became war experts of the Ukraine-Russian war. And you know, but the one consistent thing we've had is these amateur meteorologists. Guys, Dr. Brown is a renowned, world-renowned meteorologist. We have had one rain out this year, and that's because we didn't move the game up against Auburn to interfere with the spring football game. Our people at Mississippi State, contrary to popular belief, know what they're doing. So there we are. Also excited this morning as the EA Sports trailer about the new college football game is going to be out in about 2 months. July 19th is the release date. You can begin to pre-order soon. I may have to get a gaming console myself, unless I can talk Ian and let me have one of his. I used to play that game religiously. I've had every version of it, but I haven't gamed in a while. But the college football game is something that may bring me back into the world. I'm not going to go set up a, you know, what's it called, a Switch account or anything. I'm not going to do that. Won't be streaming me playing football video games. I think it's a little silly, but to each their own. But, yeah, big ball game last night. State wins the game. And I wish they would bring the college baseball game back. For those of you that had that years ago, you know how much fun that was. There were only a handful of teams, and we were one of them. But, yeah, let's bring that back. And while we're at it, you know, let's just make, you know, the college basketball game everything as great as we can make it. Anything to celebrate college sports is a good thing. And I'm glad this has finally kind of come to fruition here. Super cool. People are hyped about it. And, Of course, if you've watched the trailer that's out there on social media, you know what song they used? Yeah, you know? It's Welcome to the Jungle from Guns N' Roses. Our gateway song to Appetite for Destruction. Yeah, yeah. They didn't use Dave Matthews. No, they didn't do that. There's not a Nirvana track. They didn't use Blink 182 or Everclear or any of that lame stuff. They went with Guns and, you know, Roses. Of course they did. Of course they did. It is a song synonymous with American society. Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle, your soundtrack to the EA Sports college football game trailer. So check that out if you hadn't already. It'll hype you up. It did me. When I saw this morning, I was like, oh, this is so great. Can't wait for this. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. I love Bulldog Burger Company. I would not have taken them on as an advertiser if I didn't love them. You know, like if they were just a subpar type operation, I'd say, you know what? I don't want to affiliate myself with people that aren't winners. They're winning at Bulldog Burger Company. And when you're when you've won and needed a chance to go celebrate and maybe have that victory meal, look no further than Bulldog Burger Company. Because you know what? You're going to get a great value. You're going to get great food at a great price, great portions, great atmosphere, great service. It's all great. Three great locations to serve you, too. University Drive here in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Woodrum Flowood area. Go and but treat yourself, right? Don't get all wound up and thinking, well, I just need to eat. No, go get something good for yourself. Celebrate at Bulldog Burger Company. And sometimes it's not, maybe you don't have anything to celebrate other than just being alive. Have those spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you look great. It's science. It's on the menu. They'll make you better looking. Get a great restaurant quality hamburger. And maybe you're saying, Steve, you know what? Usually when I go in there, I get a burger because that's Bulldog Burger Company, right? But sometimes you think, you know what? I want to eat maybe a little bit lighter. Get the BLT salad. I like it grilled. You may prefer it fried. It's okay. I'm from South Mississippi. I'm required to get ranch dressing on my salad. And so it is a tenet of being from the 601 that you have to use ranch dressing on everything. But nevertheless, you get it how you want it. Get that chocolate shake to go. So many great things to choose from on that menu. And there's always fresh specials. Be sure and ask about the specials. More times than not, you don't have to ask because they'll just tell you, hey, we're also having this. But they have some cool things that kind of come and go to keep it fresh at Bulldog Burger Company. Be sure and check them out today. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's knock this game out. I got to hustle a little bit, you know, because I got to be at the ballpark. I like to get there about 90 minutes before the game. And the reason I say that is because I like to get there and get settled and kind of get the play-by-play article started. And then we go grab some food and have a chance to make my pregame call to the wife. That's kind of a tradition when she can't be with me. I always call her before the game. She's a huge baseball fan. And I like to get her feedback, you know. But it's just one of those things that we do. But made the call last night. I was a little surprised at the lineup. Connor Hyzak. I was told earlier this week that he should be back this weekend, and he was not. And so we had Ethan Pulliam playing right field, which he's athletic enough to handle that. We had Imani Larry back in at second base. And, yeah, it was a little different, though. And it was a part of me, I thought, let's don't get cute. Right? Let's not get cute here at the end. This is an important series for us. There's so much at stake. Let's don't outsmart this thing and just go play baseball. Fortunately, State wins the ball game, and I don't know if you've seen this too, and I appreciate those of you on Twitter. I have some really great Twitter followers. I do, and you're one of them, and you're many of them. You're the army out there on social media, but I was curious, you know, I'm on the row, right, and so I don't hear what's been said and done during the broadcast unless you guys tell me, right? There are some things that we hear just by being there. But there are things that make the broadcast that I'm unaware of. And somebody mentioned on Twitter, it's like, hey, what's this about a laptop in the Missouri dugout? I'm like, I didn't hear that. I said, well, when the umpire's mic was hot, they said that it came from Mississippi State. They had a laptop. We just talked about this. And the SEC's got to get a handle on this stuff. I mean, it really does. They really do. They had the thing earlier this year, according to Jim Schlossnagel of A&M, you had a situation earlier this year where a team was busted for having a live feed in the dugout. You're not supposed to have an iPad. You're not supposed to have a laptop. None of that stuff in the dugout. And they did. Guys, it's the last weekend of the regular season. You mean to tell me that somebody just wouldn't notice that? You can't make that a point of emphasis? But anyway, I don't know what's going to happen with that. And there was also some craziness, too, we'll get to in the ballgame, too. You know, it's just, there's some things that just shouldn't happen. Maybe I expect too much from officials. And as I've said on this show before, too, it's one of those crazy things, too. We're asking more of baseball umpires than we ever have in the history of the college game. We really are. Technology has changed. And so as a result, you got to keep up with that kind of stuff. Of course, you know, there are more tools and resources available to umpires to get the call right these days. They blew one last night. We'll get to that. But, yeah, I mean, an SEC coach knows the rules, and they choose to violate the rules, there should be consequences for that. That's my opinion. I think many of you share that opinion. I think that's the important aspect of things, that, you know, we got to ensure the integrity of the game. We do. All right, so speaking of the game, let's get into this. And it was a weird game. I mean, and maybe it's because, you know, I know what's at stake, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, you know, Missouri's kind of had our number the last couple times, which is so weird. They hadn't been great. It's not like they've become a rivalry, but they have kind of found a way to make Mississippi State uncomfortable. And it was an uncomfortable game last night. It just felt weird. I don't know if it's the uniforms they wear. I don't know what it is. It doesn't matter who the coach is. They have just kind of found a way to make us uncomfortable. All right, so let's jump into this thing here. All right. Of course, Cal Steven on the mound last night. And I didn't think Cal had his best stuff. He battled and competed. But it looked to me that we were a little bit too reliant on a fastball. When you have a team that is a free-swinging team like Missouri, and you know they're going to come out and swing aggressively, and they really took some big hacks last night. I mean, everybody, to a man. It's kind of like the whole mentality of, well, swing hard just in case you hit it. That's kind of what they're doing. And again, they got off some big swings and had some other balls that stayed in the ballpark that were still struck pretty well. And I really thought they're like, hey, we're going to go hunt the fastball with Cal Steven because we know he is very fastball reliant. But I thought we had some trouble kind of, you know, spotting up the change and kind of keeping them off balance a little bit. The second time through the order, we did a little bit better job of keeping them guessing. But we come right out, though, and get Daniels swinging on three pitches. And I'm thinking, okay, here we go. And then Austin walks, lengthy at bat there. Lovett strikes out looking on three pitches. So it's clear that we're going to be aggressive with these guys. And then Danny Corona, who is maybe the best player in the Southeastern Conference that you don't know. And it's because he's tucked away on a really bad Missouri team. This guy's really good. And he comes through with a single to center, which pushes Austin to third. So right out of the gate, we got runners on the corners and need to get a non-productive out to end the inning here, obviously. And we get a pop-up from Hernandez. But again, you go back and look here, some very aggressive hacks from them. All right, State goes 1-2-3 in the bottom of one. Chance grounds out to the third baseman. Mershon grounds out to first base, and then Jordan flies out to right field. Top of second, Missouri Garcia comes in and grounds out to first, just, you know, chop it over there to Hunter. And Hunter Hines has made some real advancements as a defender this year. There are some plays that he is making this year he has not made previously. I think some of that is because of his commitment to physical fitness. He is in the best shape of his college career. And so he's a little more nimble over there at first and has really made some nice plays. And I thought last night was one of those games where I thought defensively he really shined. Cerna then singles through the right side. Lengthy at bat there. We get down. We get behind in the count 2-0 and have to work our way back. Next thing you know, it's a 3-1 count. Eventually runs full. He fouls off a full count pitch. And Cerna's a switch hitter too. And like his game a little bit too. He's a young guy. But you know, he gets a single here. Then Culbertson, the shortstop, strikes out swinging, and then Pierre flies out to left. And the Bulldogs come back in for bottom of second. Hunter Hines strikes out looking, and then Imani Larry, and I mentioned this on the show, I wouldn't want to trade like Imani Larry's bat for Johnny Long's defense. And really what I'm saying there is you got to find a way to get your pal in a lineup. And, again, I think it'll be Johnny tonight because of the fact that Gerangelo's throwing. And I do want Johnny with Gerangelo. But Imani needs to be in the order. Listen, I know that he struggled at times too, but he's had some pretty good hacks here as of late. He hadn't had a lot to show for it, but he does. Last night he does. He opens a scoring on a 2-2 pitch and just rips that ball over the field, over the fence and left to make it 1-0. Coward then grounds out the first. Powell singles back up the middle, kind of stays hot there. And then Ethan Pulligan reaches on the fielder's choice as they force a runner out at second. But it's a 1-0 ball game headed to the third. And I thought Cal had a good inning here. Not just because of the fact it's a 1-2-3 inning, but very pitch efficient. You know, they kind of got some, they kind of ran the count up a little bit in the first inning. I thought we kind of got on track here in the third. Daniel strikes out swinging. And then you get a one pitch out as Austin flies out to left center. And then Lovett strikes out looking on three pitches. And so, again, now you're thinking, okay, now we're back on schedule as far as pitch count goes. All right, bottom of the third, and State really had a chance here. I thought to get a little more separation here. But Johnny pops up to the shortstop on the very first pitch. And then Bryce Chance hits an absolute frozen rope to left field. And, man, the poor kid, man, Daniels, he is basically on a dead run trying to make a play, competing. And you got to think these guys, even though the season's going to end for them this weekend, these guys love the game just as much as our kids do. They may not have had the same level of success, but there is some pride in what they do. And he is one of their better players. And so he's trying to rob Bryce Chance of extra bases. And that ball's got a little bit of loft to it. I mean, it's hit on a line, but you begin to wonder, is this thing going to sneak over? Is it going to be a wall scraper for a home run? And the kid runs right into the wall. And you could just see immediately that he was hurt. And the glove goes one way, he goes another. He has the presence of mind to get up and throw the ball in. Kind of reminded me a little bit of that Bobby Thigpen crash into the wall in 85 out at Omaha, you know. The difference was, Figgy's ever able to stay in the game, but this kid has to come out. And it seemed like it took forever for Missouri's trainer to get out there. And the coach is walking out there like he's Darth Vader. I mean, you know, if a guy's hurt, let's get on out there. I'm not going to bring a cart for you. On the hop, coach, on the hop. But they go out there, they remove him from the game, they bring in Beeman, and then Beeman goes into right, they bring Kerr over to left. But it was kind of a scary moment, and we never want to see a kid, you don't want to see a kid get hurt playing baseball, certainly not our field. But it's an injury of effort. And again, tip of the cap to the kid for playing hard. Mershon then grounds out to the shortstop, so the run scores here. And then DJ walks, and then Hunter flies out down the line at left. First pitch, just, these guys are doing a good job getting soft contact. But, again, you tack on here, it's 2-0. You feel like, okay, all right, we got a little bit of separation. We need a big inning at some point, put up a crooked number. That inning never came. Top of fourth, Corona hits an absolute monster shot to right field on an 0-1 count. And now it's 2-1, and you can feel the ballpark just kind of draw up a little bit, a little tension in the yard after this. You start thinking, is this going to happen again? Here we go again. Hernandez grounds out to second. Garcia then flies out to left center. And then Serna strikes out swinging. Lengthy at bat there, and then we win. But because of the fact there were so many extended at bats in this inning outside of Corona, now all of a sudden you begin to worry a little bit about pitch count again. All right, bottom of the fourth, they pulled Jacoby, and he's only worked three full innings, like that, his long this year. And their two regular weekend guys that have been really good for them are expected to go today and tomorrow. They just haven't announced the order. But they bring in Losey, and he's a guy that has started some games for them too. Left-hander comes in and starts throwing 91-92 from the left. I thought he had some difficulty spotting up the breaking ball, but I thought at times our pitch selection kind of made him look better than he was. Larry pops up to the third baseman. Kohler then flies out to left field. Joe Powell works it for a base on balls here, and then Pulliam fouls out to the third baseman. So, again, it's just it's gross. What I mean by that is it's like how many times do we have these little just kind of routine pop-ups in foul territory? This is not an indictment on Ethan Pulliam. Don't get me wrong. It was kind of prevalent throughout the lineup. We had a lot of soft contact. We had a lot of pop-ups on the infield. You know, we had some routine grounders. We didn't really barrel balls up last night, with rare exception, just enough to win the ball game. And so give them some credit. But I think some of that, too, is we've got to be a little more patient at the plate. Missouri top of five here. And, again, Cal kind of gets back on schedule here. Culbertson strikes out looking. Pierre pops up to the shortstop. I love one-pitch outs. And then Beeman popped up down the line and right, and Amani runs it down. I think he or Hunter, either one, could have had it, but Amani had the better angle there. And so, again, so Cal's, kind of barreling down here a little bit, kind of bearing down, pardon me. Bottom of five. State takes it back out to a two-run margin here. Long flies out to right field. And then Bryce Chance, on an 0-2 count, the pitch just catches too much of the plate. And Bryce said in postgame it was kind of a borderline pitch. It was too close to take. And I love guys that have that mentality. On an 0-2 count, two-strike count, I'm not going to take a pitch. I'm not going to put it in the hands of an umpire who had a very, very bad zone last night. He didn't say that. Those are my words. But I like a guy that's aggressive. I said, you know what? On 0-2, I can't just assume he's going to throw a chase pitch and to try to give me the chase. And so rips that ball over the ball at the wall and left, and to his own admission, he wasn't sure it was going to get out, but it did. Makes it a 3-1 ball game in favor of your Bulldogs. Mershon then strikes out swinging. Dave, not a great night last night. Jordan lines out to the third baseman. He absolutely hits this ball right on the screws, but right at the third baseman. Talk about being a game of inches. If that thing's in, you know, 12, 24 inches either way, it's in the left field. So yeah, it's good to see him hit the ball up. You know, at the bottom line is this. You know, you want to look at production, right? But he clearly saw that one pretty well, and that's a righty-lefty matchup there, able to yank that fastball right at their baseman. That ends the inning. But again, Bulldogs score one run on one hit. Top of six, and this is where things kind of got screwy for us, right? Third time through the order. Austin homers to left field, and then Lovich homers to left field. Both of these are on the very first pitch. So what that tells me is these guys have kind of learned couple times through here and give the Missouri coaching staff some credit. It's like, hey, this guy's getting ahead of us with fastballs. We're going to go up there and hunt the fastball. And they find it, which tells me you got to make an adjustment. You know, Justin Parker, that guy's he's a genius. But it's clear that Cal wasn't going to be around much longer. And you got to think about the mentality within a baseball game, right? It's like, hey, this guy, probably last time we're going to see him, they've just gone up two runs. He wants a clean inning. They're going to come out and be aggressive and pound the zone. We're going to sit dead red fastball. They get it, and they tie the game on back-to-back pitches with two solo home runs. And how crazy is it if you had four solo home runs in a ballgame? In a game that only seven runs were scored. And then Corona comes up, and I'm thinking, holy smokes. And he hits one absolutely on the screws right at Hunter Hines, and then Hunter unyielding. Steps in front, makes the grab there. But, again, some very, very loud contact from Missouri here. Hernandez then flies out to right field, and that ball had a little pace to it as well. And then Garcia strikes out swinging. And so Cal Stevens' day is done there. And you think at this point maybe he's going to be saddled with a no decision. Fortunately for him, the Bulldogs pick him up in the bottom of six. Hunter Hines strikes out swinging, lengthy at bat there. There was an at bat earlier that Hunter was called out looking, and the pitch was not even close. And I'm not just saying that from a matter of opinion. Let's just say I've got an inside source here. It was not close. Larry then walks, and really a good at bat here for Amani. He gets down 0-2 in the count and then works and works and works and works, and he won't chase that breaking stuff away and ultimately gets a base on balls here. It proved to be very significant as this was a very weird inning. It kind of typified the night. Kohler lines out to the center fielder, hit the ball really well. And so next thing you know, Amani steals second. And he stole second. It was not close. He stole second. Now, Savage, second base umpire, is in position to make the call, and he just absolutely blows it. It's not even close. And I don't know what it is about second base. We've had some plays this year at second base. I mean, like when against Memphis, when Pulliam advances to second on a ball that gets loose there in the outfield, and they called him out, and he was safe probably 3 seconds. It's nuts. It's nuts, man. And yet we ultimately get the call right, but we shouldn't have to challenge this. It's an absolute joke of a call. And listen, I'm going to give room for people to be human here. But this is your only job as a second base umpire. You're not calling balls and strikes. All you got to do is just make sure that the guys at second base, they're either out or they're safe. It is one of the simplest things in baseball. It's not even as difficult as umpiring first, right? Because you got to be mindful of, you know, a lot of throws from first. You're listening for the pound of the glove, and you're watching for the foot on the bag. But umpiring second is among the easiest thing. You don't even have to deal with fair or foul. It's the easiest job on the field, man. And then here you have an opportunity to make a big play and a big call, and you blow it? Give me a break. Give me a break. And because he was the second base umpire last night, we'll have him behind home tomorrow. It's nuts. They reviewed the call, and yet.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Yes, of course, he was safe. And the fact that State had to challenge this is an absolute joke. But that stolen base proved to be very significant. That call proved to be very significant. And then left to the crew on the field, we may still be playing baseball. Joe Powell then pops up to short center, just out behind second base there. And it's a good thing that there wasn't a play to be called by Savage, because the ball fell. And you could tell immediately as the ball goes up, and Bryce Chance mentioned that in postgame too, you could see immediately, Nima turns to me, they don't see it. It's right around twilight, right? And so the ball gets lost, and you can see everybody out there is just kind of, there's the second baseman, the center fielder, and the shortstop, and everybody's just kind of looking for each other. You know, it's like, you can tell nobody had a beat on it. The ball drops, and Amani hustles around and scores, which proves to be the game-winning run. Of course, Joe Powell credited with a double there because there wasn't an error. They just didn't pick it up. Such is life in college baseball. So Powell credited with a double. The run scores to make it 4-3. And then Pulliam strikes out swinging to end the sixth. We go to the seventh, and Tyson Harden comes in. And he, I'm going to be honest with you guys, he did not seem to have his best stuff. I thought on Sunday against Arkansas, he's absolutely outstanding. On Friday, he wasn't. And I thought last night was kind of similar to last week, where he maybe didn't have everything in his arsenal, but he just kind of gutted his way through it. Yeah, even that Friday night game against Arkansas, it was a lot of soft contact. It's true. All right, so Harden comes in, and I love relievers that come out and look to get ahead. And that's exactly what we did here. Serna strikes out swinging, but again, we get ahead 0-1 here. It ends up being a lengthy at bat, and it seemed like we were just trying to find it a little bit, but we get the out. Culbertson, we get him on 3 pitches. And when Harden, sinker, and cutter are working, it keeps people off that fastball, and the velo's up to around 95 now. That's a tough assignment for a hitter when you got a guy that can drop a sinker on you and throw that fastball and the cutter. That's tough. It truly is. He's got the slider a little bit too, but a lot of those pitches tunneling out of the same arm slot and then moving differently, you know, within a few feet of the plate. Pierre doubles to right center. Off the bat, you knew it was trouble. And it's like, and you could just tell our fans the way they responded. It's like, we're fixing to lose this ballgame. Then we walk Beeman. So you got runners at first and second. You know, the go-ahead runs are on base, and you got to deal with Austin, one of their best players. Fortunately, it's a ground ball to third. Logan Kohler absorbs it and then steps on the bag there. Really the only play to make, the simplest play to make, is always the best play to make. And we get out of the deal. You're thinking, okay, all right, let's go get some runs, right? Well, this is the crazy craziest. This is one crazy thing that happens. They bring in Jacob Peden. And, hey, give your staff some credit here, because clearly they recognized when he was in the bullpen that he was not on the active roster for the weekend. You got 27-man SEC roster, and this is just inexcusable by an SEC staff that you would put an ineligible player in an SEC game. It doesn't make any sense to me, man. The kid is warming in the bullpen, and you know as well as I do that Lamontas probably told Johnny Long, hey, you just take the first pitch no matter where it is. Well, we do, which, of course, makes the at-bat official. And so then we go out, got our list, they get with their coach. And I don't know what the penalty should be. And to be honest with you, I need to do a little more research and ask some other people a little more baseball savvy than myself. But I don't think it should be a situation where The guy should just be able to walk off the mound. I mean, and it's not the kid's fault. He doesn't know if he's active or not. They say, hey, go warm up. You assume you're active. It's not like the kid can say, hey, coach, no, I'm on 27. Because you don't tell the kids. You know, the kids don't know who's hot and who's not. They don't know. Because everybody travels. But they don't know who's active and who's not. And so Lemonis goes out. They speak with Kerrick Jackson, who is a great baseball coach. But this is just one of those things to scratch my head about. And so I went down to the official score, and I says, well, is that a no-pitch situation? And he goes, no, it's not. It's still 1-0 count. And it's not that I'm trying to take a ball away from Johnny, but there has to be more consequences for that. There has to be. You know, somebody somewhere should be ejected, and it's not the kid's fault. You know, if a coach puts an ineligible player in a game, there has to be consequences. Period. It's embarrassing for the league. It's certainly embarrassing for Missouri baseball. But it was a very wild and unique situation that I don't know that I've seen. And give Lemonis and his staff credit. I mean, I don't know that Peden's supposed to be, you know, some amazing pitcher. But the bottom line is it shows that we're paying attention, you know. And the fact, again, Johnny Long was told to take that pitch. You know it. You know he was. Ends up being a full count, and we strike out swinging. And it's just one of the – it's kind of nuts here. It really is. It's just the whole thing, and even in hindsight, it's like we talk about how weird the game was. That was a weird thing, too. All right, Bryce Chance then grounds to third. It's a close play at first. They elect to challenge this, and I really thought in live time he got him. Really nice play by the third baseman there. We do challenge, and yes, he's out. I didn't think it was really close. He got Bryce by probably a half step or so. But it's worth taking a chance in a ball game like this, right? And then Mershon strikes out swinging, and you're like, okay, all right, let's go to the eighth, and maybe Tyson can get us here. He gets Lovitz to strike out swinging, and then we walk Corona, which wasn't necessarily the worst thing. The worst thing about this situation is then we have a pass ball, and that allows now the tying run to go to second with less than two outs. We get a ground out from Hernandez, and then but the runner takes third. So now, hey, the tying run's 90 feet away, and again, Tyson didn't have his best stuff. He didn't. But he gets Garcia to strike out looking. That was a huge moment in this ballgame. You know, it really, really was. And we get behind the net count 1-2. And then it's a foul ball, foul ball, foul ball. And then we get him looking. And great, great effort from Tyson Harding. Went again when he didn't have his best stuff. He ends up going 45 pitches in two innings. Couple walks in there too. Yeah. Bottom of eight. And it really, and to be honest with you, it felt like after we got that two big third outs in the seventh and eighth with Harden up there. Right? The ground ball to Kohler to get out of the seventh, and then Harden strikes out there in the eighth to gets Garcia. And you start thinking, okay, maybe we're okay. Maybe we're okay. And then some more weird stuff happened in the eighth. It's just weird, man. All right, so DJ fouls out to the third baseman. And then Hines walks on four pitches. Okay, we're good. And then Larry hits a ground ball to third, and it's an obvious play here, right? So you're going to try to turn a 5-4-3. The throw from the third baseman is off target, and it takes the Missouri shortstop into Hunter Hines, who is sliding directly into the base, which is what you're instructed to do. He didn't stay up. He didn't hook slide him. He didn't spike him. He slides directly into the base. They get the call correct on the field. And then all of a sudden, they announced that Missouri was challenging to see if he was, you know, there was interference. And then the control center says there was. What is he supposed to do? Well, they told us, hey, you have to slide. He did. It's the throw from the third baseman that creates the contact. And so now it's an automatic double play. And I'm thinking to myself, what is happening here? Right? There's all this craziness out here. You know, you're putting an illegal pitcher in the game, and this stuff is happening. It's just such a weird vibe. And at this point, I'm thinking, God, just let us get out of here with a win. You know, just let us get home with a win. It's nuts. And this is the stuff that infuriates me about the SEC office here. Guys, if the crew on the field got this call right. It's like, well, we want to take the physical contact out of the game. The contact was not initiated by the runner. Sometimes things happen in baseball. If that guy throws a strike to second base, it's a 5-4-3. Everybody's done. But because of the fact that this kid, this third baseman from Mizzou, because his throw was off target, he makes a mistake, makes a physical error that basically puts his teammate in, quote, harm's way, and they get rewarded for that? Now, you got to play the game. It's so stupid. And that's the whole thing with this control center thing. They have got to fix this. They have overstepped so many times, right? They back at the Georgia situation, right? Oh, we're checking for malicious contact. Oh, well, there really wasn't any malicious contact. But there was this and there was that. You know, it's like, then we're going to – it's a clown show, bro. It is. And Greg Sankey should demand better. And maybe he has behind the scenes. But this is a joke right here. That could have cost us the ball game. It absolutely could have. All right, top of nine. We bring in TD. It's TD time, right? And one of the things I love about Tyler Davis is Tyler Davis attacks hitters. Absolutely attacks hitters. He doesn't get back there. The moment's not too big for TD. And there were some times yesterday I thought, you know, and I won't say who was at the plate. I won't. But, you know, one of the things that made like that 2021 team great is you had guys like T.A. and Rowdy and Landon Sims and Will Bednar. You had kids that wanted to be the guy in the big moment. You know, they weren't just going to say, hey, my teammates will pick me up. No. This is me. This is my moment to shine here and help this team. The moment was never too big for that 2021 team. And we've had some others out there kind of same way. The moment was never too big for them. You know, go back to that 16 team. You know, some of those Jake Mangum teams. I mean, Brent Rooker was there. When he was younger, he couldn't hit a breaking ball to save his life. But down the stretch, you know, hey, in 17, Brent Rooker, obviously a triple crown winner, he wanted to be up there. And the crowd swelled with anticipation when guys like Brent Rooker and Jake Mangum and Tanner Allen went to the plate, because you just kind of knew, hey, this is our guy. He's going to come through for us. I don't know that I have that same feeling right now about this team. And that's not to be negative. I just think we have to have some guys embrace the moment and say, hey, I am that guy. This is the moment. And I think Tyler Davis, in many respects, as far as a pitching staff goes, I think he has accepted that mantle and said, you know what, they're giving this thing to me. Mississippi State expects to win this ball game. They trust me enough to go get it done, and I'm going to go out there and get it done. So there's some alpha dog mentality with Tyler Davis, and I don't know that that existed last year. I think Justin Parker has kind of pulled it out of him. But he gets Cerna to strike out swinging. Culbertson then strikes out swinging, and everybody's all excited. It's a 1-1 count, and then Pierre, the nine-hole hitter, singles back up to middle. And even when that happened, I thought, we're okay. And then Beeman, the replacement, you know, for the outfielder that went out with the what we believe was a shoulder injury, strikes out swinging. And then TD just kind of looks at the dugout, and it's like, I got you, boys. So Bulldogs win 4-3, again, on a very, very weird night. Weird, weird, weird. As Ed McMahon would say, weird, wild stuff. But nuts last night. And even though we won, it didn't feel like it. Right? I mean, I don't know how you guys felt. And I even asked Simonis in postgame. I said, you know, you look, there's this weird game that ensues at Duty Noble Field. You look up at the end of it, you've won the game. It's just weird. Bryce Chance, 2-for-4 last night with 2 runs scored, of course, an RBI, as he drives himself in on a solo home run. Dave Marchand, 0-for-4, but also with an RBI, productive at bat there, productive out. DJ, 0-for-3 with a walk there. No punch outs last night either. I know that's been an issue that people brought up, but he didn't strike out at all last night. And now we're tracking that for some reason, but no strikeouts. Sometimes we have a tendency to want to look for the negative. It's like we cannot just enjoy life. We can't be happy. You know, we're last weekend of the year. We're going to Hoover, and we've got 16 SEC wins. There's never been a 16-win SEC team miss the NCAA tournament, so it's reasonable to assume we're in the tournament. We have a chance to host. And we want to go dig up some things to make us feel bad about ourselves. It makes no sense to me at all. And I wish we could breed that out of the fan base. Why can't we just be happy? Well, you know, we won a ball game last night, guys. We got 16 wins. We're in the tournament. You know, what's Logan Kohler doing with runners in scoring position? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. What about some of our freshman pitchers? Let's go look at their splits against right-handers. Can we just be happy? It's so stupid to me. Absolutely stupid to me. We can't be happy. We got to find something to be miserable about. Oh, I'm going to choose to be happy. You know what makes me miserable is that stuff. That makes me miserable. All right, Hunter Hines 0 for 3. He did have a couple punchies. Imani Larry 1 for 3. Scores a couple runs, also a walk. So 4 plate appearances for him. He gets on base twice. And that's been kind of the thing with Imani, right? He's always had an OBP about 100 points higher in his batting average. It was a time earlier this year that Imani was second only to Dave Marchand in OBP. Logan Kohler goes 0 for 3. Joe Powell, 2 for 2. The hottest hitter in the country, right? Not only does Joe go 2 for 2, he also works a walk, too. So 3 plate appearances, he's on base 3 times. Ethan Pulliam goes 0 for 3. Johnny Long, 0 for 3 with a strikeout. And that was that crazy situation where you had to face two pitchers in an AB. Look at the pitching numbers here. Cal Steven, credited with his 8th win of the year, goes 6 innings full, allows 5 hits, 3 runs, all 3 of them earned, of course, 2 of those on solo shots, 8 Ks against 1 walk. It's remarkable. I mean, it's remarkable what he has done. It truly is. And again, I don't think he had his best stuff. Crazy. 88 pitches last night, 8 flyouts, and that's really when Cal's at his best. He's a flyout, strikeout guy. Tyson Harding allows just 1 hit, but has 2 walks, also 4 punch-outs. So he faces 9 hitters and strikes out nearly half of them. But 45 pitches, he says that he'd be able to come back tomorrow, and maybe he could. But Tyler Davis, just 15 pitches. We know that he's ready to go. They say he could go today if he needs to. But allows just the 1 hit there and picks up his 4th save in the process. But the Bulldogs, 4-3 winners. Again, on a weird night at Duty Noble Field. Just so many weird things that happened in that game. It's like even now, I'm just thinking, I'm just so glad that we won. After all of the craziness that happened in this game, we put another win in the win column. Time for today's top 10 list is always brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Blair is a real dude. Yeah, got a place here in Starkville, season ticket holder, multiple sports. I like to keep business in the family when we can, but here's the deal. Blair is the guy that gets things done. The mortgage lending process is a complicated one. Underwriters are always asking for some weird stuff. You need to have somebody to go be your advocate. And that's Blair Chandler. Whether you're looking for a game day condo, which I think is a wonderful idea, because at some point you're thinking, you know what, we're going to downsize and retire. Why don't we retire to Starkville? Go to all the ball games. Yeah, that'd be fun, right? Or maybe life is throwing you a curveball and you're having to do a reset. Or maybe you're just starting out in life and need to buy your first home. Rather than put the guesswork into it and say, who should I talk to? Just listen to me. It's Blair Chandler, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. We have had several Boneyard listeners close loans with Blair. You'd expect that. Close with Blair. It's not just a catchy website name. It's the reality of the situation. 23 years of experience in the industry. Works a Priority One mortgage. A lot of people out there want your business. But here's the thing. Not everybody deserves it. It's true. Especially with something as important as buying a home. Trust Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Okay, Melanie Moody, friend of the show and frequent contributor to the top 10 list, reached out and said, hey, you know, in honor of the cicadas, why don't we do something about that? Well, there's not a lot of great songs about cicadas. There is, you know, a nice book of poetry out there about cicadas, but They're pretty thick this year. They don't cause any harm to you, but there are billions of these cicadas. And for some people, it's like their first experience. I remember being kids, man. When we were kids, I shared this with Mike Nemeth yesterday. You know, you'd have these shells, right? They'd come out of their shell. And you'd have trees all in the neighborhood just covered in these shells. And so as kids, to provide service to our neighborhood at times, we just get a bucket and go get all the shells off the trees. We just walk them down our street and go get them all done. And then, go pour them down the storm drain. We did it just to be good kids. I don't know if I get any points for that, but that's what we did, you know. And plus, it was kind of neat, too, right? Because sometimes you'd find one that wasn't fully out of their shell. It was kind of like Excalibur, right? You find that, and you're like, oh, look at this, you know. But nevertheless, so Melanie says, hey, why don't we do something about insects or whatever? We're just going to do bugs. And I know that there's some, you know, entomologists out there that would say, Steve, they're not all bugs. There's some that are insects, some are arachnids, whatever. But here's the thing. I don't care. So here we go. Top 10 songs about bugs. You didn't expect to get that this morning when you woke up. But here we are. I was reluctant to do this one, but it would be an obvious omission if I didn't. You guys know I'm not a big fan of the Dave Matthews Band. I think all that's kind of hokey. But listen, you like what you like. I won't judge you for listening to Dave Matthews Band. They have a huge following. And the fact that they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think, is a joke. But all that understood, you couldn't put a list of songs together about bugs without Dave Matthews Band's Ants Marching. That's your number 10 track today. And you said, but Steve, it should be number one. We'll make your own list, have your own show. Number nine, kind of an interesting song here. It's one of these bro country slash rap type deals, which I'm still having trouble kind of coming to grips with, to be honest with you. I remember coaching high school baseball. I had some kids say, well, you know, rap and country are very similar. They are absolutely not in any way whatsoever similar. But there has been this whole push to get, tracks, like with the bass line. And as somebody explained to me, like bro country, if the phrase girl is ever mentioned, it's bro country. But there's an artist by the name of Colt Ford has a great song called Cricket on a Line. And it's about, growing up in the South. Cricket on a Line, obviously, is about fishing for brim. We've all done that. But interesting song, Colt Ford's Cricket on a Line, number nine. Number eight, one of the weirdest songs in the history of the Pearl Jam catalog off the Vitalogy album. And I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, oh, are they drunk? You know? It's probably the only song that we've ever had on the show that features the accordion as the primary instrument. But it's Bugs by Pearl Jam, written by Eddie Vedder. It is a very weird song. It doesn't match anything else in the catalog. But hey, if we're doing a song about bugs and it gives a chance to talk about Pearl Jam, we should. And I don't think you guys understand, especially you young folks, you don't get like the impact that Pearl Jam had. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, Pearl Jam is the band of the 90s. Truly, the band of the 90s. Some other people would argue, but it's impossible to deny Pearl Jam's influence. And, of course, they began as Mookie Blaylock. That was the name of their band. And, of course, Mookie Blaylock's people didn't like that. So that's why the name Pearl, the first album, Pearl Jam, is 10. It's because that was Mookie Blaylock's jersey number, 10. You didn't know that? Well, now you know. Oh, I thought it was five guys because they had like both hands in. No, it's 10 of Mookie Blaylock. That's from Eddie Vedder himself. But nevertheless, Pearl Jam, the band of the 90s. And no matter what the people at Spencer's Gifts tell you, Pearl Jam and Soundgarden were really the innovators of the Seattle scene. True. And I recently saw an interview with Chris Cornell that it's old and obviously... sadly, but he talked about how like when everybody was running to Seattle, that the Seattle bands were no longer there. Like the headliners, like, oh, we're going to go to Seattle, you know, and Alice in Chains and Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden were out touring the world. And so when you went to Seattle to kind of find the new sound, like you were kind of getting the bands that couldn't make it. True story. That didn't stop record companies and MTV from promoting them. They were flashes in the pan, for sure. Number seven, my youngest son, when he was a kid, this was his favorite song. I didn't care for it, but we had to listen to it a lot. You know how that works. It's a song by a band called Owl City, and the song is Fireflies. And so I wanted to work that in for Ian, and he would probably be embarrassed if I told you today, but he absolutely loved this song. Absolutely loved it. Like, anytime we got in a car, he had to hear it. And then, like, you know, you get a couple miles down the road, hey, Mama, can I listen to Owl City again? I want to hear Fireflies. And because she loves her children, she'd put it on, and, you know, she tried to say, well, if you listen to the rest of the album, it's pretty good. No, it's not. It wasn't then. It's not now. But that's your number seven track, Owl City's Fireflies. Number six, kind of a cool song here, too. And a band that Dave Grohl actually played drums for a while on a tour, and they did an album with them. It's Queens of the Stone Age, and it's the song Mosquito Song. Pretty cool vibe with this one. It was a hidden track, too. So it wasn't like, you know, a song that was kind of pushed in the forefront of their catalog. But I think you'll dig it. Number five, we're going to take some liberties here. We are. And some of you are going to laugh, and that's okay. You know, what's life without a little whimsy, right? Your number five track is Snoop Dogg's Roaches in My Ashtray. Yeah, not the literal roach, not the insect. We're going to use a little double entendre there. But Roaches in My Ashtray, cool song by Snoop Dogg. Love Snoop. Calvin brought us. Great guy. Ties to Mississippi, too. Number four, listened to this jam just last night. I love the band Thousand Foot Crutch, and they're back doing some music again. I'm excited about that. And they're a band with a very positive message, too. And this might be my favorite song from them. Like, when I think about it, you know, it's consistently when I think about listening to Thousand Foot Crutch, I usually go to Fly on the Wall. And I think part of it's because of the fact I love the strings, right? You know, back when your good friend and host was out there trying to make it, you know, I loved, like, Depeche Mode and Nine Inch Nails. I love the industrial sound, but I liked the strings, but I liked the edge of the rock guitar. And I think they blend it pretty well. We've done a top 10,000 Foot Crutch list on the show, but I absolutely dig that band, man. That they are, they're believers. So it's a lot more positive message. Number three, going in a much different direction here. A band that is basically defunct now is Hell Yeah. And of course, that was a band with Vinny Abbott on drums from Pantera. Chad Gray, of course, in Mudvayne. He's out doing some stuff with Mudvayne again. And I'm glad to see that. Great track they had called Moth, like a moth to a flame. A lot of people have kind of played that up. I think Chad's vocals are great. Many of you may not know this, but Chad's married to Shannon Guns from Sirius XM Octane. And what's interesting about that whole relationship is Shannon Guns, a big LA Dodgers fan. I don't hold that against her. But you know, she was engaged to a guy that was a big producer, and he died kind of suddenly, unexpectedly. I don't know the circumstances behind it, but she shared a lot of that on social media, and a lot of people kind of lifted her up, and then it seemed like a year later, Chad Gray started like appearing in her social media stuff. And they got married, and, you know, it's a cool thing. It really is. It truly is. Number two, a band that we've had on here occasionally. And Serge Tankian recently said that really no plans to do a whole lot in the future. A lot of people want System of a Down to get back together. I've never really been a huge Serge fan because I think there's an element of silliness with all of some of the things they do, and I think they want to be taken seriously for their silliness. So it's not me. You know, for some of you, this is a big band for you, and obviously I respect them. I wouldn't have them number two. One of the best songs in the catalog, it's Spiders from System of a Down. And I know they're not insects, they're arachnids. That's why thus bugs. But number one, we talk about transformations in life, kind of changing things up a little bit. And this is a band, too, that changed, too. That in some respects, they sold out. Like, they went out on Ozfest, and they were like a rock band and kind of doing some punk stuff. And then after Ozfest, they elected to kind of change their sound a little bit. They had a big hit, and it's our number one track. It's Crazy Town's Butterfly. And again, this is like one of those hybrid type things where there's some rap stuff on it and some alternative rock stuff on it. But it was a big hit. It seemed like it was everywhere. and they're very much a one-hit wonder. And then they go back out on Ozfest the next year, and they play this song, and people are like booing them. It's like, we're here to hear rock and roll, man. But I dig the track. I know many of you do as well. It probably takes you back to a simpler time in life. But that's our top 10 list for today. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samonte, my friend, on Twitter at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. Why don't you make Roy's day and follow him on Twitter? He won't be tweeting out pictures of his food or his dog or anything like that. It's usually just our top 10 list and maybe some Mississippi State stuff. He's not going to be crowding your feed with a bunch of nonsense. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle, Dogmatic67. And I appreciate Roy for what he does. He contacted me years ago and said, man, I love the top 10 list. Have you ever thought about putting them on Spotify? And I said, man, I don't do a Spotify thing, and I really don't have the time for all this. He goes, I'll do it myself. So Roy has done this just out of the kindness of his heart. He gets nothing from it other than being my friend, right? I mean, that's all there is to it. And so many of you have enjoyed those lists. And so you can thank Roy for making those things available to you. I cannot count how many people have messaged me over the years saying, I listen to this when I travel. I'm always looking for new playlists. I've learned about new bands. I've been reminded of old favorites. And some people have said, hey, Steve, this is my favorite band. I'd love to hear your take on my favorite band. And I've done those lists for you. And so it's been a thing that we started back in COVID. It's been going now for over 4 years. We've done hundreds of these things, man. Hundreds of these. And I remember a time the top 10 list wasn't all about music. We used to do movies. And at one time, I had a parent ask me to do my top 10 dinosaurs and, you know, cartoon characters. But you guys typically prefer the music. And so here we are. Thanks, as always, for your support of the top 10 list. All right, let's take a look around the league. This next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. You need to go by and see them next time you're in town. Miss Kathy Brown does such an amazing job, absolutely amazing job, outfitting our fan base with the latest in Mississippi State merchandise. Whether you're looking to, you know, decorate your fan cave, maybe your office, detail out your RV, I don't know your needs, but I know this. When you need that perfect gift for a Mississippi State fan, you're going to find it at Campus Bookmart. Whether it be a diploma frame, a shirt, bumper sticker, cowbell, you can find it all there. If you can't make the town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a Loyal Boneyard listener, we'll get use listener. Goodness. I'll give you a phrase that pays. That's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Roberts, and they get you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. Okay, let's take a quick look back at the night that was. Everybody in a league is playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's been that way for a few years now. And trying to get everybody kind of lined up for next week and get ready for the postseason. All right, earliest game of the day yesterday was LSU and Ole Miss. And they ended up having a rain delay. And Ole Miss, both these teams now in the SEC tournament. But it's brutal, man. It's brutal, bro. It is. Ole Miss now 27 and 26, and then you've got two games to play this weekend. If LSU sweeps, then Ole Miss goes to Hoover with a sub-500 record. They would be 27 and 28. I think there's a real possibility of that happening. And then that puts, you know, everybody's like, well, Ole Miss make it in as a three. Guys, it's not going to happen, okay, unless something they win this series and maybe get a couple games at Hoover. It's just, it's not going to happen. And I think there's some Ole Miss people, too, that are kind of ready for baseball season to end. And you know how it is when we're in the same position sometimes, and like you're just hanging on to hope. It's like, man, if we can just get to Hoover, anything can happen. And you know in your heart nothing good's going to happen, but you just hate for baseball to be over. You know what I mean? That's kind of – there's some Ole Miss people that's like, you know what, as long as you're playing, I'm going to cheer for them. And I respect that. I really do. But I remember at the beginning of the year, I think I can't remember what show I was on. And there was an Ole Miss guy on the show before me. Like, so, like, he was there, and then, like, they brought me in, and they let us have a little interaction. And they were talking about, you know, Ole Miss and State coaching situations. And I said then, there will be a coaching change in Mississippi, but it will not be in Starkville, Mississippi. And now looking back in hindsight, we probably need to find that clip. I think Brad Logan may have been the guy on the show with me. I think. I don't even remember whose show it was. But I think that's the case. But I shared that with you just because of the fact that I think most people that were objective about this Ole Miss team knew it was going to be a tough year. They went out and spent it. They chased a bunch of kids in a portal. And it was kind of like they did get a couple kids that were decent. My point being is that when you're a team on the decline, it's so difficult to go get a one-year player to go hitch his wagon to yours. That's why I think Mississippi State's got a chance to be much better in the portal this year, because you can say, hey, you know what? We're only a couple pieces away. We turn this thing around. But I think we're going to be more than a couple pieces away. But LSU wins 5-1. Ole Miss gets one run there in the fifth. And Gage Jump worked six innings. Had 8 Ks in the ballgame. Interesting, they elected to keep Luke Holman on Friday and move Gage Jump up. And, you know, Luke obviously has been their most reliable pitcher this year. But that's interesting. So now you get game one, and now Luke Holman's going today. And I can only begin to imagine that atmosphere on Saturday to close out the regular season to LSU. Even though there's a lot of people kind of off the Jay Johnson bandwagon there. But, again, good win for LSU. And now LSU and Ole Miss both in the tournament. Missouri is eliminated. So Missouri and Auburn, of course, Auburn, not a big surprise there. Nor it is for Missouri. They were picked last in the league. They still have a chance to finish there. All right, Georgia and Florida. Georgia wins 9-4 here, which makes Florida 26-26 overall, 11-17 in the league. And so Florida in a situation similar to Ole Miss. And, of course, they have gotten the benefit of the doubt much of the year, but I think people have kind of abandoned that ship now. I don't know if there's anybody in the country playing better baseball than Georgia right now. Just kind of calling it for what it is. Maybe Tennessee? Maybe. Georgia playing exceptionally well. And this game was pretty much over before it got going, right? It was 4-0 in the second. Florida gets a couple in the third and the fourth to make it a 4-2 ball game, and Georgia comes right back with three and then adds on two in the seventh. And then, you know, Florida scores a couple there in the ninth, really kind of academic runs. But Georgia playing well. We really need Florida to get a game from them, though. We really do. If they could get two, it'd be even better. All right, South Carolina and Tennessee. You know, 2 weeks ago, people were forecasting South Carolina to host over Mississippi State. I didn't buy it then, and certainly not buying it now, because South Carolina got swept last weekend by Georgia, and then they have to head to Lindsey Nelson. They get beat 9-3 last night and got up early 1-0, and the next thing you know, it is a 6-1 ball game in favor of Tennessee. South Carolina scratches a run across there in the sixth, and then, you know, Tennessee pretty much puts it away there in the seventh with a three spot. And that's one thing that we talked about early in the year. And we knew that State's SEC schedule was front-loaded. We felt that way anyway, you know, with LSU, A&M, and Florida. Those are tough environments to play in. And, of course, LSU's kind of been our nemesis in many respects in Starkville. But we knew that South Carolina's schedule was going to be brutal at the end. And so now here they are really struggling. I think they're going to have a tough time. We'd like for them to get a game, but at the end of the day, now that we're in a situation that they can't catch us in the standings, I don't care what happens to them. I truly don't. And so in that respect, you know, maybe I'm thinking maybe South Carolina gets a game to give Kentucky a little room there. But it's crazy how this whole thing works out. But South Carolina now no longer expected to host, will be a 2-seed somewhere unless something crazy happens. But that's why you play the games. The best that South Carolina can now finish is 15-15, and there will not be a 500 host in the Southeastern Conference. Kentucky, still hanging on, a game up with 2 games left to play to win an SEC championship. Craziness, man. And Kentucky all over Vanderbilt last night. And one of the things that I thought about, too, because Nick Mangione is my friend, and I thought, you know, a chance to win an SEC championship at home against a team, Vanderbilt, that has kind of been your nemesis at times. I knew Nick would have them ready to go, and they went right to work. I mean, absolutely right to work. They give up one in the first, they get three, and then in the third, it is a 7-1 ball game. And they just kind of begin to tack on. They make it an 8-1 ball game. Vandy gets three in the fifth, to kind of make it entertaining. And then from there, Vanderbilt just really struggled to kind of get things going. But Kentucky wins 10-5. It's a pretty loud game one win. Trey Pooser got the W for Kentucky. He's now 4-1 on the year. Just worked five innings. Ryan Waldschmidt, 3-for-4 in the ball game, 3 RBIs and a home run. Very interesting. Jonathan Vastine had a good game for them, too, and that's kind of been the story. You know, there just hasn't. Jonathan Vastine's a good player. Just didn't have a good, strong supporting cast around him. All right, I made kind of a surprise pick earlier this week when I picked Auburn to take Alabama, and they win game one. It's interesting, too. Auburn's going to finish 13th or 14th in the league. But you know what's crazy about that is they could have a better overall record than Florida and Ole Miss. They could. They're game over right now, 26-25, and they put these final two games at home. This Alabama team, well, they've got some pieces in that, you know, they hit the portal hard. They did. And they put some pieces together offensively. I just don't think this team is nearly as cohesive as some people wanted to suggest. And I think Auburn, of course, you know, Butch Thompson's our guy, man. We love Butch. Butch will have his kids ready to play. And if they get just enough pitching, and they did last night in a 4-2 win, but the Tigers also 10 hits in a game. It's true. Justin LeBron from Alabama, a guy that, Alabama's going to have to fight to keep that kid. That kid's a legit player, man. Shortstop goes 3-for-4 last night. Auburn's Ike Irish, 2-for-3 in the ballgame. So, big win there. Auburn can take a series today. How about that? For those of you that stayed up late with me last night, I stayed up and watched that, and then I punched out a couple of articles because I thought to myself, I don't want to have a heavy workload on Friday. I want to go ahead and get as much done as I can so we can just record the show on Friday and get it out to the listening public before the ball game. But I stayed up and I watched this Arkansas and A&M game, and lo and behold, it's no score all the way into the 11th, and A&M loads the bases, and Arkansas walks in the winning run in a very non-competitive at-bat there. Absolutely nuts, man. Jace Laviolette, a little bit banged up last night, but he's a ball player. He stays in the ball game. But I thought Evan Auchinback, and he's a guy that got us when we went down there too, is out of the bullpen. He was outstanding last night. Outstanding. And it was a chance that, Arkansas gets a double with one out in the top half of the 11th. And then Auchinback is like, that's as far as it goes, fellas. And so they win. So now Arkansas kind of fighting to hang on to the SEC West lead. So let's look at the standings. What did last night's action do for us, Steve? Well, the one thing it does for us is that we can finish no worse than sixth and be the sixth seed. We could finish as high as five, but because of the fact that A&M won over Arkansas last night, we cannot catch them. And he said, but Steve, they're two games ahead of us. If Arkansas wins the next two, yes, but A&M would hold the tiebreaker. So we would finish second in the West, but they would get the benefit of the head-to-head tiebreaker and get the top four. We would not. So we're 16-12. So running down, let's run down the East first. Kentucky, 21-7, a game ahead of Tennessee, not just for the SEC East, but for the SEC Championship. Now, with two games to play, Arkansas, two games back at 19-9. Georgia, 17-11 in the conference. South Carolina drops to 13-15. South Carolina could have and should have a losing record in conference when this is all said and done. Again, they're going to be fighting hard to be 15, but they're not hosting. And I think Tennessee probably does those boys. Vanderbilt 12-16. Some people thought Vanderbilt would really contend this year. I just didn't see it. And they are in free fall. It's absolutely nuts to think where they are right now. And they're 3-11 on the road this year. Did you ever expect that from Vanderbilt? 3-11? Tough. Florida, 11-17. And 26-26 overall. Again, you know the rules. You know, Florida's got to win this series against Georgia to even give themselves a chance. Unless they go to Hoover and win the whole thing. Missouri now 8-20 and officially eliminated from postseason play. They're 22-31 overall, 8-20. They were picked last in the East. They're going to be last in the East. And again, they got the fewest number of votes in the Southeastern Conference. But Auburn could still catch them. Auburn still just a game back. Mississippi State could help Butch Thompson out a little bit. State gets two, and then Auburn wins. Then they would win the tiebreaker to stay out of the cellar. And I hate that for Butch. I really do. Again to the West now. Arkansas 19-9. A&M 18-10. So A&M can still win the West. Yeah. Yeah. Then they need to win these next two ball games, right? Because of the fact that they're a game back. So in order to force the tie, which I guess technically there could be no tie. I guess that, yeah. You get my point, though. A&M can still win the West. Arkansas can win it. We cannot. But we've got to win over both of these teams, so it doesn't really help us RPI-wise. And I'm going to do some RPI discussion with you shortly. But State, again, 16-12, two games behind A&M with two to play. So we could catch them in the standings, but not in the seedings. And then Alabama, now four games behind Mississippi State. And what's interesting, Alabama just a game ahead of LSU and Ole Miss. And, of course, Alabama takes that series against LSU last weekend. But could be a scenario, too, that, let's say Auburn wins one more and Alabama finishes 13-17. The RPI is good, so you still feel like they'll make the tournament somewhere. But they have not handled things well down the stretch. LSU and Ole Miss, of course, will resume their series today. Both of those teams 11-17. And this is important because of the fact that we're going to be the 5 or the 6, which means we're going to play either the 11 or 12. And that's kind of what LSU and Ole Miss, and in some respects, I guess, Florida are kind of vying for here. It could even be Vanderbilt or Alabama. So while State's positioning is kind of coming into focus, who we would play next week is still a matter of some discussion because there's about a half dozen teams that could finish 12th in the league this year. There's a lot still left to be figured out as far as next week's field. No question about that. But that's kind of where things stand today. And so when I began to think about, my rooting interest, I don't really care who we play. My hope is that we can make the SEC tournament kind of a moot point. Now, the Mississippi State fan in me, of course, wants to play Ole Miss because you'd love to be able to end their season. And especially if they end up retiring Mike Bianco, he'd be able to say, his last game as a collegiate coach was against Mississippi State and a loss. Not to mention, if we play those guys and win, it gives you a 3-2 record against Ole Miss this year. And I did the math last year. Mike Bianco's record against Mississippi State, not nearly as good as you might expect. Now, you are aware of what's happened the last several years. But, his first few years there, they were really hot. But I did the math, and there's only a handful of years that he's had a winning record against Mississippi State. Even through all these coaching changes and through the glory years of Ole Miss baseball, more years than not, they finished even or behind Mississippi State. It's true. And so it almost would be kind of a fitting goodbye, like a kiss goodbye, Mike, right? It's true. But I want to take a few minutes here, and we're going to go over kind of what else is going on around the country that impacts Mississippi State in our quest to make the NCAA regional hosting crew. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Man, I tell you this, I absolutely love the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. I'm going to be sure to go check it out again at some point. We're going to bring all the kids into town, and we're going to entertain out there. You say, Steve, why not do it at your house? Well, my family's outgrowing the house, and I want everybody to have their own quarters, right? We can all get together. We're going to rent that place out, and we're going to bring everybody in, and we're going to enjoy being together. We're going to stock that full-service kitchen. I won't use the wet bar. Some other people in the family may. I won't. When you come to town, maybe that's what you want to do, right? It's so nice to be just 5 minutes away from campus. It's so incredibly convenient. Right, I got news yesterday that football season's pretty much booked up. Yeah. Yeah, people are already kind of planning ahead. And how cool is that, right? But here's the deal. It doesn't always have to be a football weekend. I don't know if you're thinking about regional weekends. I don't know availability. But you say, you know what? Hey, I want to bring a full group in, and we're going to celebrate Bulldog baseball. Maybe, just maybe. This summer you're thinking, you know what, maybe we can't afford to go take a big trip somewhere this year. Maybe you got pregnant kids in the family, right? Maybe you got grandchildren on the way, and maybe taking that big trip is just not the way to go. Let me encourage you to do a staycation to Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just get everybody together. Have the baby shower there, right? The guys can all go outside and sit on that big back porch around the fire. Even in the summertime, fires are cool when they're outside. It's true. But let me tell you, go to the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page will come up. You can peruse through all the amenities that are available for you. And you can see this is the place when you're coming to town, whether it be a work group, a family group, a guy's weekend, a girl's weekend, a couple's weekend. And that's always a great idea too, right? Get everybody together. And so, you know, it's we never get it together enough. And like we always say that, we got to get together more often. Just book the trip, man. Just do it. Say, hey, here's what we're going to do. Everybody pitch in a little bit. We're gonna rent out this renovated clubhouse in Starkville, and we're going to go up there and spend a few nights together, and we're just going to enjoy being people, right? What could be better? So when you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, some booking options are going to come open for you. It's going to be Airbnb. It's going to be VRBO. But if you book through the Evolve website, I got a promo code for you. That's BSR10. My attitude is, if it's free, it's me. That promo code gets you a free 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. How cool is that? Be sure and check it out today, Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Okay, now Mississippi State dropped in the RPI last night to 20, and everybody panicked. Like, oh my gosh, you know, we beat Missouri and we dropped. That's true, but that's not why Mississippi State dropped. Why Mississippi State dropped is we got leapfrogged a little bit. Duke was behind us, and they beat North Carolina last night. North Carolina dropped from 5 to 6 in the RPI. And, of course, Duke moves up from 22 to 19. So we really need North Carolina to win that series. We need to bounce back today and win. And you may feel differently tonight. And I'm doing an update nightly, kind of keeping you guys abreast of the movement in the RPI. It's a free article over at jeanspage.com. But Duke leapfrogged us, as did North Carolina State. NC State, they get a big win over Wake last night. Wake Forest remaining a constant at number 9 in the RPI. So it's not, people are like, oh my gosh, we're going to have to play these games against Missouri and that's going to drop us. And yeah, it does a little bit. But the bigger issue is when teams behind us beat teams ahead of us, that's where the issue is. So your rooting interest in the ACC, of course, is for the chalk to hold. You want North Carolina to beat Duke. And you want Wake Forest to beat NC State. Now, there's some other series out there of note. You know, Oregon State won game one last night against Arizona. In Arizona. We really would like Arizona to take that series. I still think that you're going to have some West Coast host, maybe one or two. Oregon State now up to 11 in the RPI. However, if they lose to Arizona, we continue to sweep. You got a chance to kind of move ahead of those guys. Virginia had a win last night at Virginia Tech. They moved up a spot. I don't know that we catch Virginia just because I think they're going to win that series. And, yeah, it is kind of what it is. Oklahoma's 13 in the RPI. They're up 2. And I don't see a scenario where a Power 5 conference champion doesn't host. Right? Even if we catch Oklahoma, I still think there's a scenario where Oklahoma remains in the hosting discussion, as they should. Alabama is 14 in the RPI, which is ahead of Mississippi State. They have absolutely no chance to host. And so even though they're ahead of us, and I think if Auburn continues to play well, ultimately we'll pass them. We're 4 games ahead of them, right? It never boils down to just RPI, right? If it did, you'd say, well, Alabama's got 14 RPI. State has 20. We got to go with Alabama. Well, Mississippi State beat Alabama head-to-head, 2 out of 3. And Mississippi State is 4 games ahead of them in the SEC standings. Well, that's why you have people on a committee. Interesting, East Carolina wrote this up last night. They dropped 3 spots in the RPI, and they will not play a team unless they meet Tulane in the AAC tournament that has an RPI less than 100 the rest of the way. Their RPI has an anchor because of the league they play in. They're going to continue to drop even if they win because of the quality of competition that they're going to face. You know, we dropped 4 spots last night. We could move up 4 tonight if the games go the way we need them to. UC Santa Barbara is going to have beat Cal State Northridge this weekend. There is not a Big Sky tournament. And so they're going to play California Riverside next week that has an RPI like 265. I think that's correct. And so there's a good chance UC Santa Barbara, even if they win, are going to drop behind Mississippi State. And the same could be said for East Carolina. And so you start thinking about this. If it goes the way we expect with those teams, and of course Alabama's out of it, state's right there around 17. I think we just simply need to be in the teens. That's what I think. I think we need to be in the teens. And of course, you finish sixth in the SEC, right, with an 18-12 record, and state strength of schedule is 16 in the country. You start looking at some of these teams that are ahead of us, right? Oklahoma State is a team that's kind of similarly situated with us. Their resume, very, very similar to State, even though State's had a better record against Quad 1 at 12-11. They're 9-11. But their strength of schedule is 29. Ours is 16. UC Santa Barbara, of course they play in the Big West. It's not a star-studded conference. Strength of schedule is 91. East Carolina, strength of schedule 56, and that's only going to get worse. Alabama has a number 4 strength of schedule, which is why they've remained so high in the RPI. But they're not going to host. Oregon State is 11 in the RPI. Their strength of schedule is 70, which is worse than Indiana State, who's at 62. And so you start looking, there's more factors than just the RPI. The KPI is what matters, but the RPI is a factor in those discussions as well. The bottom line is State needs to win. Simple as that. We can't sit around and just wait for the traffic to clear. We have to handle our end of this and take our opportunity here. We need to go sweep Missouri. Now, I think, again, if we get one of these remaining two, it's a possibility. But I don't think you can leave it up in the hands of the committee. I think you've got to go out and take these last two ball games to really kind of say, hey, 18-12 in this league. And not to mention, if Georgia drops a game, and they can, to South Carolina, then all of a sudden we would have the same record. Let's say Georgia splits with South Carolina in these final two. We both end up 18-12 and we beat them head-to-head, even though their RPI is higher. You're not going to not take Georgia. But you can't take Georgia and then say, well, Mississippi State had basically an identical resume in the same conference and beat them head-to-head, so no, we're not going to take them, right? This didn't make any sense. You never know what these committees are going to do, and geography always plays a bit of a factor in this. But the reality of it is we need some ACC games to go our way. So we need to win, and we need the chalk to hold in the ACC. We need North Carolina to beat Duke. We need Wake Forest to beat NC State because of the fact the teams they're playing are our contemporaries when it comes to postseason resume. It's as simple as that. But I do think with a win tonight, State moves back into the teens. And then depending how things go around the country, how far we move up in the teens, you know, kind of remains to be seen. But the Bulldogs, in many respects, control their own destiny. That's the main thing with us, is we just got to take care of our business because of the fact that we had some non-conference things not go our way. We dug ourselves a bit of a hole RPI-wise. I mean, losing to teams like Central Arkansas, not great. Too. I mean, think about this for a second, right? We talk about all the money we've left on the table, right? I mean, let's kind of get into it a little bit here, right? Before we get out of here. When you start thinking about the SEC standings, right? So we think about like just recently, right? Well, you know, Steve, we lose that game to Arkansas on Sunday. And you could make the same claim on Friday. The Friday one kind of bothers me worse than Sunday does because, you know, you had the lead late and you couldn't close it, right? You just need 6 outs. You know, in the Sunday game, you needed 21. But let's say you get that one back. And then all of a sudden, Mississippi State is 17-12, right? Or 17-11, excuse me. All right, so you're 17-11. You had those two games at Florida. You got walked off in the ninth. Let's just say we get one of those. Well, now you're 18-10 with 2 to play. Let's think about that Ole Miss game, the one that we blew on Saturday night where you had, you know, 3 big leads, or big leads, we had 3 leads late and you blew it. Well, let's say you get the close in that ball game and all of a sudden you're 19-9. And then you start kind of looking around at this and you begin to realize, well, hey, if we're 19-9, we go into the final weekend a game or two out of potentially winning an SEC championship. That's how close it's been. So it's not just the fact that we dropped some non-conference games, we left some money on the SEC table. I mean, honestly, if you look at it, the Sunday game at Ole Miss, that got away from us. It did. It really did. But outside of that, we have been in every game. You talk about progress. You talk about getting better, kind of getting back to Mississippi State standards. And I think if we're fair with ourselves, this is not one of our more talented teams. Now, we've got some very talented players on this team. But, yeah, this is a team that still had to kind of learn to win, if you get what I'm saying. But, you know, I talked to one of our coaches last night, and I was like, you know, he's like, hey, see you tomorrow. I was like, yeah. I said, maybe a little more margin tomorrow, huh? He goes, you know what's so funny? We haven't had that either way, really, much this year. You know, we had that Saturday game at Florida. We go out there and absolutely skull drag those guys. But, guys, it's been nip and tuck all year for us. And it doesn't matter who we've played. It's like, for some reason, we have not really been able to just kind of run away from people, with rare exception. And we had the Air Force game. You know, we kind of got after those guys a little bit. But, yeah, this has been – it's not just been about bullpen. You know, it's been about offense at times, too, that we just – you know, we have not been able to kind of put people away. There have been a few games here and there. But by and large, you know, we have been a team that has kind of had to learn to win late. And when you've got a bullpen at times that kind of struggles a little bit with depth, that's an issue. You can always find games, one or two games on either side. Well, we should have lost this one. We should have won that one, right? But you typically are who you are. Your record says who you are. And the record right now shows that Mississippi State is the number six team in the Southeastern Conference in a 14-team league. We're going to finish in the top half of this league. That's guaranteed. Does it meet my expectations for this program? No. Does it meet my expectations for this season? Yes. I don't think we should ever be in a situation that we're having to sweat this thing out. Right? But when you look again, you know, we got some guys that got to step up in big moments and win ball games for us. And, again, I think Tyson Harden did some big things for us, you know, last night, Tyler Davis, obviously. But I still want to see that big hit late. Like when you've got that 3-1 lead or that, you know, 4-2 lead, and you get in the seventh inning and you get the big, you know, double in the gap that clears the bases, I need to see more of that, truly. Yeah, you know, we're winning some games, and I think we're managing it pretty well. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, players have to perform, and there's never a bigger opportunity for that than in the postseason. What I worry a little bit about this weekend is the pressure. And I think Lemonis is doing a good job trying to manage the expectations, saying, guys, this should be the funnest time in your last playing baseball. But I think for so many of these guys, they've never experienced playing in an NCAA tournament. They came here to do that. And they came here when Mississippi State went to Omaha in 18, 19, and 21, and we probably would have gone in 20 had they had a tournament. But that's the Mississippi State they signed up for. But then they get here, they never been. And so it's a new experience for them. And even though Stone Simmons didn't play, I think Stone's a guy that's kind of be a leader in the clubhouse, you know, because he understands what that means, what that's like. And so I think it's sometimes it's just kind of like, you know, you're evolving and becoming a new person. And I think this is a team, too, that you get through this weekend and you know you're in a tournament. And let's say you break through and get a chance to host, which would only be the seventh time we've hosted since they changed the format in 99 in 25 years, right? 7 and 25. I think this is a team that will begin to relax. This is a team that all year long they've had to hear about from our fans and even some in the media. This is Lemonis' last year. Can you begin to imagine the dark cloud this team has had to play under? And I think once they kind of get over that hump, and I think if you sweep this weekend, I think in many respects you will, but I think the reality of it, I think that there has been so much put on these kids that I'm not sure they know how to act right now. You just got to get out there and go play a baseball game. And I think some of the weirdness of last night isn't just being Missouri. I think it's because of the fact that there's some players preparing to do something they've never done before. So let's be there to support them in their efforts. If you hadn't done so, go to whenthebottomfalls.com. You can get the new book, When the Bottom Falls, and you can get all of my sports titles. And pretty soon, you're going to be able to pre-order the new book, The Dude, The Life and Times of Duty Noble, on that same website. I will give you some advance notice when we get ready to go live. I will let you know on social media and on the show. But Father's Day is coming up. I encourage you get that, a signed copy of Dogpile or any of my books. Complete the Steve Robertson collection. I never thought I'd be sitting here saying that, but your book number 7 is on its way. If you haven't got caught up, get caught up, and then when the dude comes out, you'll have something brand new. And, of course, we're going to have a kind of a limited edition run on that too. But I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to get the show up, and then we're going to get over to Duty Double Field and hopefully win us a ball game today. We'll have full coverage over at GeneSpage.com. If you're not a member, you certainly should be. The Mississippi State affiliate for 247 Sports. Nobody covers the Bulldogs like we do. Absolutely. And I got the receipts and the mileage on the car to prove that too. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.